Hey, KU fans, welcome back to another episode of the KU Sports Hour here at KUSports.com with Shane Jackson and Benton Smith. I'm Matt Tate, and we're going to talk for the next 30 or 40 minutes about all things KU, but mostly KU football a little and KU basketball a lot. Fair, Benton? Right?
That's probably fair. I mean, considering KU football is 0-5 and just had a disaster at K-State a few days ago, I'm pretty sure a lot of people, if they weren't already, you know, checked out and out there raking leaves, as you've implored them to, then that game did it.
Yeah. Know. Yeah, I think so. It's weird you said that game was a few days ago, which it was. And I don't know if this is a sign that it's just been a long week or a long season, but when you said that, I was like, a few days ago? That was forever ago. And
yeah, I was pretty sure I was wrong as soon as I said it. I was like, was that? No, there's no way it was just a few days ago.
Nope, it was. It was, and it was bad. And it was bad in a special team sense. It was bad in an O-line sense, which, you know, that's one thing we've continued to see this year. The defense hung in there at times, which is maybe a little bit of a bright spot, but not enough. And you can't ask them to do everything. And then the biggest thing, obviously, Jalen Daniels was in the mix. Back starting and – you know, running for his life at times, trying to survive at times, but also looking pretty good at times. Shane, what'd you think of Jalen in his sort of, you know, encore performance to what we saw earlier this season?
Yeah, I mean, he ran a lot more this time. And I think not as many of them were designed runs, but he was scrambling a lot. I think he had 10 scrambles on Saturday.
You think or you know?
I know, but said it like I didn't know.
Mr. Stats over there.
But the second play of the game, he throws a near interception, and he's able to kind of bounce back, and he put together a really good drive in the first half, late in the first half, I believe. So, I mean, there were good moments. There were obviously bad moments, but that's what we were arguing about a few weeks ago. Like, hey, just put him in and let him live through those bad moments, because the best version of him is years down the road, and you get that by letting him make mistakes now.
Yeah, what jumped out at you, Ben?
Probably just the fact that they're not saying this, but they're clearly investing in the future. I mean, how much every week do we hear about, you know, Caron Prunty during a press conference? You know, Les Miles will bring him up for no reason in particular, but to kind of hint at how much they're playing young guys. And now you're playing Jalen Daniels, a true freshman quarterback who turns 18 tomorrow as your starting quarterback. So, I mean, they just don't want to have that on the record, I think, of, you know, saying publicly, yeah, we just need to play a lot of these young guys because we're not very good this year. But that's what they're doing.
It is. And I mean, I get the maybe the politically correct path is to not say that, but I wouldn't judge them. I think there's nothing wrong with that. The goal and your job here is to win games. And if, you know, if everybody knows you're going to probably go 0-10 this year, but you're saying, hey, what we're doing is trying to win games in the future. Who could have a problem with that? But, I mean, I get it both ways, I guess. But yeah, I thought Jalen, I mean, to your point, Shane, about not a lot of designed runs, that's the O-line, right? I mean, like, he doesn't really – and he's a freshman, so he might take off and run, you know, sooner than a veteran quarterback would anyway. But when your line breaks down every single snap, you have to – find something to do. You have to start looking for that escape route and just take off and go and try to get something out of it. And I think the thing that jumps out about him running to me is how many times he takes like legitimate hits. I mean, he is not afraid to get popped, and he bounces up every time. And a couple of times he dished out the contact himself. I mean, you know, you love to see that because it's so competitive, and he's obviously a tough kid, but at the same time, you hate to see it a little bit, because one of those hits could be bad news for the rest of the game, the rest of the season, whatever. So I'm sure they're talking to him some about, hey, get down a little bit, you know, but as a lot of people maybe listening saw in that Broncos-Chiefs debacle over the weekend, Drew Lock tried to get down and his knee brace got stuck in the turf and he almost hurt himself. So there's also something to be said about not sliding and maybe just try to get every yard you can. But at least this week we got to hear from Les Miles on Monday that Jalen is the guy. I mean, I think even maybe those were the words he said. Did you feel like he committed to that strong enough, Ben?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he gave himself an out by basically saying, you know, I'm never going to commit to a guy being the starter, like, no matter what happens. You know, obviously they could adjust if they need to, but this is, you know, the most that he's put his faith and made it public about a specific quarterback by far.
Sure. Year,
you know? So, I mean, it's, they're definitely rolling with Jalen Daniels. And I mean, as we've discussed multiple times, you know, that's probably the most interesting thing that could have happened for this team, and probably the best thing for the future too.
Yeah. Good point. What do you make of the defense? Both of you, better efforts lately. They've looked much better. I think the cornerbacks, the young corners especially, are exciting. There's a lot to like there. I know a lot of KU fans. I tweeted something to that effect about Jalen Daniels. I tweeted something to that effect about the defense. I know a lot have checked out already. I mean, there's nothing to like. They responded to me, and that's fine. I don't blame you for feeling that way. But if you're looking for stuff, it's there. And I think this defense, you know, has taken significant strides. I mean, I thought they were an abomination early in the season, and they look much, much better over the last couple of weeks. They just can't hang in there the whole game against Big 12 teams when their offense is giving you nothing. So, Benton, what's the biggest area? What do you think made it click for these guys?
I don't know. I'm sure a lot of it is just reps for the younger players.
Sure.
You know, and obviously, you know, Prunty's been starting since week one. Him and Elijah Jones basically took a starting job away from Kyle Mayberry, right? Because we probably thought entering this year that Mayberry was going to be one of those starting corners, but
yep.
They've outperformed him, and they've and not that he's not playing, he gets in there too because you have a rotation. But I think a lot of it's just the reps. You know, Marcus Harris and Dejon Terry up front are kind of getting more comfortable the more that they play, and that's what you need too, because you know, throughout the defense, you know, it's the younger guys are the more talented guys. Sometimes the veterans just are, you know, a little bit more experienced, a little bit stronger, a little bit more ready to play right now.
Right.
But the talent is obviously in your freshman and sophomore classes.
Yeah, Stephen Parker's another one who's really started to come on, and high hopes for him, not only this year, but for the future too. And he's making plays. He's starting to be noticed out there. That's an exciting thing for the future of their D-line. So really the linebacker position continues to be kind of a question mark. But I don't know. I mean, there's young guys there too. And
when Drew Prox is healthy, he's really good. Like he showed at West Virginia.
Point. Yeah. That's
he's
a really
missed
good
two,
point.
He's missed two games. He got sick before the K-State game, and then the Oklahoma State game, he missed kind of unexpectedly too.
Snake bitten, man. Poor guy. He can't get back on the field. It's too bad because that start he had last year was phenomenal. And he shows – he changes their defense. When he's out there, it's a totally different look, and he's right there in the middle of all of it. So, Shane, anything defensively jump out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were reasons for concern when you watched the Coastal Carolina game, but it turns out maybe not many teams can actually stop that option attack. But, I think I pointed out early in the season that it didn't feel like they were very creative when it came to blitzing, and now it does feel like they're a little more creative. On one drive in particular, I think in the second quarter, they had a three-man rush on third and long, and then later that drive on third and short, they brought Gavin Potter off the edge on a little twist. So, like, they're just – it feels like maybe they're doing a little bit more defensively, and I don't know if that's just because we're deeper into the season and maybe you feel more comfortable throwing different stuff out there, and maybe, you know, the pandemic-adjusted offseason – limited you from doing that for the first couple of games. I'm not sure. Or just, you know, the young players in general, you didn't want to throw too much at them at once, but it does feel like they're at least a little more creative the last couple of weeks in terms of blitzing and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, do what you do with your base, get that down, understand this is how we play defense. And then once you show an ability to do that, you can throw those wrinkles in there. That's probably as much of it as anything, but they do deserve credit. And, you know, they're not, I mean, what was the final score? 40, how many they get? K-State?
55-14.
55. There you go. So, you know, it's not – it doesn't look like it on the scoreboard, right? That's a lot of points. But a lot of those points were special teams gaffes. And then the
pick six.
Yeah, pick six.
So three non-offensive touchdowns in the first half.
Yeah, 34-7. And you gave them 21 of those points in that regard. So, they weren't in that game. K-State definitely, you know, controlled it from start to finish. And I don't know what to think about this week. Iowa State's coming here. Iowa State's a really good football team, another fundamentally sound football team. They're well into their culture being established under Matt Campbell. So what can you both tell us real quickly about this game? And then we'll move on to some hoops talk because yeah, we're almost in November, which means it actually almost might be sort of happening kind of maybe, I think. Then talk about Iowa State real quick. What do you expect this week?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, Iowa State has been just rock solid since Matt Campbell took that program over. Just every year, you know, at least 8 wins. That's just what they're going to do. They come out and they win the games they're supposed to. It's maybe the pandemic caught them with their opener this year. But other than that, they're just so consistent. And they've got they've got the leading rusher in the nation at the running back position. He eclipsed Khalil Herbert as of last week. You know, they've just come off they've just come off a competitive loss against against Oklahoma State. So I mean, it's a very good team. It's a ranked team. It's a team that I would expect would probably roll coming into KU. So KU as usual is a heavy underdog, right, Shane?
I honestly don't even know the spread. That's how bad it is. I assume they're a bigger underdog.
Our Vegas insider, Shane Jackson.
Yeah,
it's been a busy preps week, so I actually don't know.
I gotta take these off and make sure I'm. Yeah, that's still game. Unbelievable. Well, no worries. I think let's wrap up the football part of this with you know, Benton especially. I want to hear from you, but Shane too. There's been so much, right? The fans are checking out quickly. They have been, understandably so. I don't blame them. Shane, thank you for your efforts toward that rake those leaves hashtag that I got started last week. I mean, everybody that has been listening to this podcast over the last couple of years has heard that if you want to rake your leaves on Saturday afternoon instead of watching this team, I condone that. I think that's a valuable use of time. And this week, I don't remember what it was, but somebody sparked it with some Twitter fan or reader, or somebody sparked it by saying, you know, is it okay if I stop watching or check out or whatever? And that was just the nudge I needed to actually start the hashtag. And then Shane, you know, like the true teammate that he is, he jumped on board with it and was just, I mean, it was beautiful. What I learned, though, is that there was already a rake those leaves hashtag in existence. And that was news to me, and I was disappointed by it. Needless to say, we now dominate that hashtag. But I don't know if the fans are going to jump on board 100% with it. There were a few that did, which was great. I'm grateful for that. But I think a lot of people kind of took it as a, so here's what we're doing. So I'm going to go bake that cake, hashtag bake that cake, or hashtag clean the house, or hashtag vacuum the stairs, or whatever. So I'm good with either one. I actually enjoyed all those as well. But if we can get the rake those leaves going, I'd be really excited about it. So I don't even remember what my question was now, but Ben, I think what I wanted to hear from you is, you know, again, with the idea of fans checking out, another lost season, it's great to be looking to the future. If you're Les Miles, it's great to be positive and to think that, hey, this is still ahead of us. We've just got to keep our heads down and keep going and building this thing up. And that's what they're doing. And that's all they can do. But what are you learning about what they expect from the fans? I mean, what's their message to the fan base? What are they telling people in terms of, hey, stick with us? Is it a viable message? Do you think it can help, or do you think it sounds legit?
I think the fans that truly care and truly are invested will stick around, because, you know, they want to see these young players develop, and they want to kind of be in on the ground floor, you know, with Jalen Daniels and Caron Prunty and Marcus Harris and Dejon Terry and Kenny Logan and all these young guys who are playing. But I mean, for the fans who are just over it, you know, they're the fans that I'm sure are over it a couple games into every season. You know, they've been doing this for over a decade now. And if you're tired of it, you're not going to pay attention. I mean, it's been the same thing year in and year out, you know, 3 wins at most, less than that a lot of times. And definitely less than that this year. There's not a lot of winnable games left in this five games that we've got coming forward. So, I don't know, if you truly are like one of these diehard fans, you're going to stick around. And I don't know, I know that Les has done, you know, his part in kind of saying, hey, we like what we've got for the future. Hey, we're playing a lot of young guys. But to me, that's not going to win over a lot of fans who were either on the fence or already in a negative place regarding their outlook.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate for Les and this whole staff, because they're paying the price of something they had nothing to do with, right? Mm-hmm. If this was just year two of Les Miles and he was hired to replace somebody who retired or somebody who, you know, decided to mutually part ways after a bunch of 5 and 6 win seasons or whatever, then I think the fans would be like, okay, I can get behind this. We're still only halfway through year two. Let's hang in there. But because it's been a decade of this, I mean, year after year after year, the same message, the same, you know, excuses, the same justifications, the same everything from multiple staffs and different coaches and different players. I mean, they're paying for that right now. I think it'd be really easy for people to stick with them and say, we're in. Yeah, we'll rebuild this thing with you. Let's go. But like you said, Ben, when they're tired of it already after 8, 9, 10 years of hearing that, there's just not a whole lot more Les can do, which is why I think, you know, his mantra, he's not getting upset. He's not changing who he is. He's not losing his mind. I think people would like to see that. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see him stand up in front of the podium and say, after a game like that, especially a special teams performance, I'd love to see him say, that wasn't good enough. Like, we've got to be better. And that's accurate. There's nothing wrong with him saying that. I don't think anybody would, like, say he's flying off the handle or anything. He's just stating facts. And so I think it'd be interesting if he'd show some of that. It's one thing to say philosophically, we're still building. That's what we're here for. And you got to stick with us. It's just about, you know, the long haul, the big picture. But you can think all that and still have that be what you're about and still get a little bit upset that your special teams was a complete disaster. And so what I want to see from him the next 5 games is maybe that, maybe a little bit more of leaning toward addressing some of the realities while still building up the big picture. So we'll see if we see it. I'm not holding my breath, and I don't think anybody should be, but I think that would go a long way toward bringing some of these fans back and making people go, okay, well, at least he gets it. Because right now you wonder if he even gets it. You're like, how can he be so positive? And that's a $1 million question that I don't think anybody has the answer to. Shane, put a bow on the football portion of this for us. Give us some wisdom.
If he was going to be passionate, it was going to be the K-State game, right? I mean, that special teams giving up that, you know, a couple of punt returns for touchdowns is almost unacceptable if you're a Les Miles-led team. I mean, because KU, yes, they can say, hey, they're playing the young guys on both offense and defense. They're going to be outmatched. They're going to get outscored by a million points. But giving up 2 special teams returns for touchdowns is just fundamentals. And that's something that, you know, fans obviously shouldn't accept, and Les Miles even probably shouldn't accept. So if he was going to be passionate about something at any point this season, you think it would have been after the K-State game with just the special teams.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's tough for fans to obviously see this, the big picture, but this feels like the first time that they've tried to do something like this. And you can see that, hey, it may work down the road, because this is what happens when you play young guys at any sport, at any level. I mean, there's going to be struggles, but it's obviously a tough thing to hear for KU fans, but it feels like this is the first step of, hey, truly rebuilding. And obviously, you know, fans don't want to accept it after 10 years.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with COVID and the whole thing, but it's really setting up a pretty big third year. I mean, if they're able to get spring football in, if they're able to have a full off season and a full camp and all that, at that point, you got to start showing some progress. I mean, people aren't going to buy it even for a game or two next year if it's another drubbing, another loss, another overmatched team, and the same message. So,
and for the record, Iowa State is 28.5 point favorites.
Oh,
so
there he is. There he is. He's back. Action Jackson.
Just wanted to make sure the spread was in there.
28.5
mm-hmm.
on the road.
Yeah.
Not that the road or home means a whole lot this year, but yeah, that's incredible.
Or at KU in general.
Yeah. True. Good point. Speaking of the road, we've got some news in the Kansas basketball world. Kind of. There's obviously been definite plans to end the idea of the Orlando bubble, with ESPN moving a bunch of those early season events down to Orlando. It sounded like a dream. It sounded like a lock for a bunch of months, a bunch of weeks, and it just blew up recently. And a lot of reasons for that. It sounded like the biggest reason, just everybody couldn't get on the same page. ESPN couldn't, the conferences couldn't, the NCAA couldn't, and that makes it hard for sure, because you're bringing in a collection of different conferences, different teams, different protocols, all that stuff. So that is out. KU didn't take too long to get figured out with something, though, and there's been reports now that KU is headed to Fort Myers, Florida, instead of Orlando, where they will play Gonzaga on the November 25th opening day of the college basketball season. I don't know about you guys, but as cool as the idea of playing in that Wooden Legacy event with UCLA and Georgetown and Virginia in it sounded, I thought that was a great way to open things. This sounds cooler, man. KU Gonzaga? Are you kidding me? That, and then how about Gonzaga's also got Baylor on their schedule? I mean, those guys are going for broke, and they have to. They're in the West Coast Conference where they play two games a year, you know. So I think it's awesome. It's not official yet. KU hasn't confirmed it, but a bunch of reports out there, and I've been able to get a pretty good feel for them as accurate. So it sounds like as of today, now it could change. Obviously, we got to get to November 25th. But as of today, KU will play Gonzaga on November 25th. What jumped out at you, Benton? I mean, this is your world, man. This is it for you. This is the dream scenario. Just good college basketball matchups is what you live for. And this is one on opening freaking night.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly had – it's we're so far along in, like, the reshuffling of the schedule that I had totally forgotten about that that event with UCLA and Virginia and Georgetown, right?
Right.
That was going to be in Anaheim or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, that seemed cool, but I agree with you. This KU-Gonzaga game is, like, that's the kind of matchup you want to see. And it's, as you mentioned, it's kind of the matchup that Gonzaga has made a habit of scheduling. Mark Few kind of likes playing – these type of games whenever he can, you know, in November and December, just because they dominated the WCC when that play starts. So it's nice to kind of have that on your plate too early on. But yeah, I mean, other than like KU playing like UNC or Duke or somebody like that, this is to me as a marquee matchup as you can get, because we're now used to KU playing Kentucky, right?
Right. That's what happens.
It happens at least every 3 years, sometimes more often than that. So KU Gonzaga, I mean, that's something you don't get to see. And that's, you know, two great coaches and two great programs. And I mean, that'll be fun. I mean, Gonzaga is so consistent, you know, it doesn't matter who's on their roster. They always have like tough big guys and, you know, great perimeter play and sound defensively and one of the best offenses in the country year in and year out. So that should be an awesome game.
Yeah, it'll be a blast. I did a thing today that's on the site right now that took a closer look at Gonzaga, and it's, I mean, these teams are very similar. It's weird. I mean, Gonzaga probably has a little bit more inside, but David McCormick, you know, he might be the best of the bunch if he plays up to his potential. So but it's a good mix of experience and talent. It's a good mix of versatility on both rosters. And so you know, what a great test out of the gate. I think it's really cool that they can match up. And you mentioned it. I mean, we've seen KU Kentucky so many times. I'll never forget the first time I went to Rupp Arena. I was like, oh, I got to soak this in. I might not ever be back here. And then I was back there like 2 years later with you. So it's crazy how often that one happens. And that one is still on the schedule. KU released its full schedule, except for those two games and then one more that's still to be determined. But they've got that on there. The December 1st Champions Classic against Kentucky is on there. It's at a to-be-determined site right now. You know, that could break any minute, any day. Obviously, Indianapolis has been reported as one of the possible or even likely venues for that. So, you know, time will tell on that thing. But it does look like everybody's planning on KU-Kentucky. So, you've got KU-Kentucky on the schedule. You've got KU-Gonzaga on the schedule. You've got Tennessee in January as the SEC Big 12 Challenge game. You've got Creighton, a legitimate top 10 type of team, a legitimate Final Four threat last year with a lot of talent back. I mean, they're coming to Allen Fieldhouse on December 8th. It is a loaded non-conference schedule once again for KU, even with the, you know, Tarleton State and North Dakota State and Omaha, even with those teams on the docket now, it's loaded. And that's what KU's done. That's what Bill Self's done. What's cool is that the only team I think out there that can probably match it is Gonzaga, and these two are playing each other. Gonzaga also plays Tennessee. Gonzaga plays Iowa. Gonzaga plays Baylor. Gonzaga plays Kansas. I mean,
they're going to play Auburn too, right?
Yeah. There you go. Right. Gonzaga going to play Auburn in Fort Myers, and the fourth team down there at least was announced today by sources with CBS Sports and Matt Norlander. He said St. Joe is the fourth team that will be down there. So KU will play St. Joe on the 27th if that event holds as has been reported. So, you know, that's good. It wasn't going to be North Carolina as the fourth team, right? We all knew that. So Gonzaga goes down there and they get to play Auburn and KU. And KU has to play Gonzaga, but they get St. Joe as a kind of buffer between potentially Gonzaga and then Kentucky on this right in the middle of St. Joe. That's, I don't know anything about St. Joe's team. Traditionally solid, you know, they're not going to be spectacular, but they'll be a tough out. They'll be a challenge and it'll be a lot of fun. Shane, anything about the schedule jump out at you? I know you've been busy with high school stuff and football as well, but have you looked at this schedule yet? I mean, even talking Big 12 stuff, I mean, anything jump out at you?
Well, the biggest thing I did was read your story about five most interesting games. So,
oh, nice.
Recommend people checking that out. But yes, the game that obviously stood out to me was from a high school perspective was Creighton coming to Kansas because Mitch Balick is going to be there. And I just remember being an intern and covering a couple of Eudora games, and he was so much better than everybody else on the court. So I just think it would be interesting to see him coming back and playing at KU and you know, a team that recruited him. And obviously some people thought that's where he was going to end up going. So I just think that would be interesting. And obviously Creighton is good, so that helps as well. So in a very loaded schedule, for some reason that game stood out to me.
By the way, look how far you've come, man. I mean, an intern covering Eudora high school games, and now look at you. The foremost statistic authority on Kansas football. You
biggest authority.
Wow, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to upset you there. Yeah. But no, that's going to be a great game, man. I talked to Mitch this summer about the idea when the game was announced and became official, and I mean, he told me this summer when I talked to him that he's been to so many KU games, you know, growing up around here and then also being recruited for years. I mean, since he was a freshman, you know, he was going on unofficial visits and sitting behind the bench. And he told me there were so many times where he left Allen Fieldhouse and was like, man, I want to commit. I want to go to Kansas. That was too cool. That's where I want to go. And you know, he hung in there and he didn't, and he found a great spot in Creighton, had a great career up there, and it's going to be really cool. I think it'll be disappointing for him that he won't get 16,300 in there to experience it. I think it'll be disappointing because I doubt his entire family is going to be able to make that game now. I hope they can find a way to get in, but with only 1,500 people allowed in the venue, it's going to be tough for him to get 40 of those. But you never know. Maybe people out there have a heart and will make sure the Balick family can make it happen and get as many of them in there as they can. Before we go, I want to end on that. I want to talk about that attendance idea. KU did officially announce this week that the number is approximately 1,500, which is obviously less than 10% of Allen Fieldhouse. Good, bad, weird, crazy, scary, made you cry, made you laugh. What were your emotions when you heard emotions? What a stupid word. What was your reaction when you heard 1,500? I didn't think it'd be much more than 2,000, but 1,500 is obviously less than 2,000, so it's even less than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I definitely did not have any emotions when I read
Come
that
on.
Figure.
Come on.
It was surprising, though. I mean, I guess it's about on par with kind of the approach that's being taken, you know, with football and that type of thing. I wondered if it was going to be even smaller just because it's an indoor situation. But when you think about it, what's the max, 16,300, something like that. So, right. I mean, you're well below 10% there, and it'll be strange for sure. I mean, KU games are, you know, obviously almost always packed, and a lot of times the environment is nuts in there for, you know, these big games. Like, I'm sure it would have been for that Creighton game. And, you know, when Baylor comes, you know, that's going to be a great game that's on the schedule this year. And it's just not going to be anything like that. I'm sure the fans who are there will be, you know, they'll be psyched and they'll do their best, but it's going to be unlike anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, Shane, do you think it's possible? I mean, I don't know how much of the World Series you watched or college football games or whatever, but, I mean, the places that are having fans, you do hear them. Now, granted, we're on our couches or whatever listening, and so there could be mics strategically placed and enhanced audio and all that, but you do hear them. It doesn't sound like a completely empty environment. So, I mean, do you think it's even possible for 1,500 fans, you know, 850 of those being donors, and then some student tickets and things like that? I mean, do you think it's even possible for them to make a difference and give it a home court edge, or is it just going to seem, like Benton said, really weird? And yeah, it'll be at home, but it won't be the edge. Any idea?
I suppose if there was going to be a place where it could be possible, it would be Allen Fieldhouse, sure. Right? Just the way it's kind of shaped, and maybe you could figure out a way that makes it sound like there's a lot of fans there. But I would imagine that most of the sounds that we hear are more inflated by, you know, TV production when we were watching those type of games. So I think it's going to be strange no matter what. But yeah, if it is possible, it would be more of a basketball arena like Allen Fieldhouse, I think, would make that more like feel like a real game. But it will be interesting to see, that's for sure.
Yeah, it will. I think it's tough, man. I mean, there's a lot of fans that are going to be disappointed about not being able to go this year. And, I guess the only advice you can give them is just hang in there. It's a one-year thing. It sucks, but, it's not like you'll never go to another game, and you just got to do the best you can. It'll be really interesting. They didn't announce times or television yet, but it'll be really interesting to see how many of these games are on ESPN Plus and Big 12 Now. And, you know, they already had a lot last year. I think it was 8 or 10 last year. And I know that's the way it's trending. So are we getting into even more of those? And some of the people that would normally be at these games are now at home, and maybe they aren't equipped to handle the Big 12 Now ESPN Plus stuff. If you aren't, get on it. It's now. Start now preparing yourself. Talk to whoever you have to get yourself set up for that streaming capability, because there will be a lot of games on this schedule that are streaming only, and you're going to miss them if you don't have the capability. So just a little friendly advice from us here at KUSports.com. Start now. It does not matter that the first home game is not until December. Start your preparations now so you won't be as upset when it rolls around, because I don't blame you for getting upset, but it's the way of the future, and that's where we're headed. So streaming, get it locked up right now. Guys, anything you want to end with here? We got about 5 minutes left. Any other thoughts, KU related or otherwise, that are important to you? You get off your chest. Ben, I can see you itching to say something. Just get it out.
I totally forgot to ask you last week what it was like to watch the fake late night that KU had to have this year.
Brought it up.
They didn't do it live this year because they couldn't, and it was totally different, and I did not see any of it, but I know Matt Tate watched every second of it. So what was that like?
They did a lot of cool things. They had the opportunity to do some pretty cool things, especially with, you know, some of the social injustice stuff they've been doing, and really showcase that stuff, which is terrific. A lot of programs and athletes and coaches up there doing a lot of great things. So that was neat. And that was something that probably wouldn't have fit into late night or come across the same, right? If it's playing up on the video board, but there are 16,000 people, the audio is different. You don't hear it as well. So they had a great opportunity to get that and really showcase that. And then of course, Rock Chalk Video is terrific. Their graphics and stuff are amazing. They're as good as anybody at what they do. So some of that came through on the broadcast too. I thought it was about 30 minutes too long. And I'm sure that was largely to pack a bunch of commercials in there and make some money and give everybody their time. But I thought it could have been a 60-minute thing, and it didn't need to be 90. And it was tough. The scrimmage was tough. I mean, like, generally speaking, during those scrimmages, I have my yellow pad out and I write every player's name down well in advance. And then as they do something, I write it under their name. And then I go back and do a blog about it. And that's because I'm sitting there and I can see everything, right? The scrimmage, you're limited to what the camera's following when it was on TV. So I didn't do that. I didn't even try to do that. I was just trying to keep the score, and that was tough because they didn't show the clock or the score on the broadcast. So I had to get in touch with some other guys, Gary Bedore, a former alum of ours, and make sure he had the same score and the same points I did, because it was not there. from the perspective of fans just watching and wanting to get to see these guys for the first time, they probably didn't care what the score was. But anytime you're playing a game, you should have the score available. I thought that was a bad miss. I mean, I just didn't understand why they didn't include that. And it was the same way for the women's scrimmage. So, yeah, you got to see these guys and you got to take a look at it. But they're still competing and you're curious. What's the score? Unless you're keeping it like a dorky sports writer has to, then you don't know. And so I thought it was cool, though. I thought, you know, a couple of things that stood out. Bryce Thompson, he made plays. He didn't score a single point, but he made plays, and he looked like he belongs. Tristan Inaruna did score. He scored 10 points. He looked good. And he's a guy that's kind of been shoved to the bottom and almost an afterthought right now. So there's a lot to like about this team. It's going to be really fun to see them when November rolls around. And, you know, but that scrimmage was what it was. I mean, self-said on the broadcast, we'll forget this as soon as it's over. And I think they will. But everybody showed a little bit of something, and it was fun. And Shane got to read all about it. So good job. All right, well, that's all we got. Thanks for asking about that, though. I'm glad you did, because I had completely forgotten about it. It was a less than memorable event. It was important. It was cool they did it and salvaged it, and they kept late night alive. But, yeah, it didn't really stick with me. Not the way that KU K-State football game did. What does that say, right? So, anyway, that's all the time we got here on the KU Sports Hour. Check out all our coverage about both sports and others throughout the rest of the week at kusports.com. For Benton Smith and Shane Jackson, I'm Matt Tate. Thanks for listening to this episode, and take care of yourselves, everyone.